Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast, presented by our good friends at 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Danner Jr. here with my man Fletcher Page. And on the producer tip, my man is back. Kareem Elgazar is here with us.
Producing back here.
Producing your face off right now. What's up, gents?
Nothing much, man. Feeling good. How about you?
What's new?
Not much. Not much going on. You know, we've got the draft is behind us. So we have the reaction. I hope everybody listened last week to the live BBP. Thanks to everybody that came out to 50 West. It was awesome. Zach Taylor was great. Showed up early. Worked the room. I mean, the dude is a pro's pro already at this point.
He's flawless in that game.
Yeah. I mean, said hello to everybody and, you know, entertained questions and took pictures. And it was a perfect night. We were out on the patio. A lot of good conversation. We'll get into kind of reacting to some of the stuff, some of our takeaways from that conversation with Zach Taylor. We can talk a little bit about the offensive line. We can talk about John Ross, because we got to talk about John Ross. We can talk a little about Andy Dalton reacting to Ryan Finley, so to speak. We've got people are power ranking now, which always makes me mad. Fire the coach guy continuing to have a hell of a run here in the city. We've got a lot of stuff to get to. I do want to just gonna say this right now before we start. This is my last run, my last show on the BBP. It is. This is not a drill. This is real.
This is not a drill.
I am headed off to another company. I will still be here locally. I'm not leaving the city. I'm not leaving the conversation here. But this is the end of my time at the Inquirer. I'll talk more about that at the end of the show. I don't want to bog it all down right now. But I'll spill. I'm ready to spill it. Well, anything I got, I'm gonna as we did on Jim's last episode. Fire all cannons.
Fire all cannons. Yeah. I know you want to talk about it later, but you know, been working with you since the 2015 season. It's been an absolute pleasure, Paulie. I mean, you taught me a lot. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun. We've done a lot of things with this beat. And you're always innovating. You're always pushing us. You're always trying to figure out, you know, new ways to do things. And I think the readers and the viewers and the listeners have really appreciated that over the last few years. So I know I certainly appreciated it, too. And you make me think about photos differently. Also, before I was just always trying to get game action only and reaction. But also, I try to think about the storylines within the game. Like, ooh, Paul and Fletcher are going to be writing about that later. Yeah. Paul and Fletcher are going to need that photo. So, again, just thanks, man.
Dude, it's been it goes both ways. It's been awesome. Everybody here at the Inquirer is incredible, and this has always been my dream job, and I've tried to treat it as such and just love it. But, you know, life changes and your situation changes, and I have a 2-year-old daughter now. I've got a second one coming on the way,
and you know, the setup for what you need out of your job changes pretty quickly. And so I'm not leaving for any reason other than that, because I love this place. I love everything we've created here, and it's been a ton of fun. We'll talk more. We'll talk more about that here at the end.
Because no doubt.
The BBP, man, it has been the lifeblood. It has been the lifeblood of this operation here for a while now, and we have more people that yell BBP at me than probably even know my real name. Whenever we go out on the road, at camp, games, whatever, I feel like that is what people always are saying, and I feel like we've created this awesome community here. So I hate to sort of leave the BBP aspect of it behind, but, you know, keep an eye out. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on. So, did anything stick out to you from last week, Fletcher, when we talked to from the Zach Taylor pod?
Just off the top of my head, I did think it was interesting that Zach told that. Well, first he told the story about Jim Turner feeding alligators peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
I think that was the first takeaway.
Yeah. So turns out.
Yeah, we've got some breaking news about that.
Turns out that's illegal. And I don't want to get Jim Turner into more trouble than he's already been in, but apparently you're not allowed to feed alligators? We found this. Someone brought this up to us afterwards. Like, in Florida, it's actually a state law, you cannot feed the gators. So,
period.
So the funny story, which is still funny.
Yeah.
That he's feeding peanut butter jelly sandwiches. And if you Google peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and feeding alligators, there is no record of gators liking peanut butter and jelly at all. I don't know if that's a thing.
It seems like a lot of work and trouble to go to just to throw it out to an alligator. Yeah. A peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it takes a lot of love and care. You don't want to just fling that thing to a reptile.
Yeah, so that was a quality anecdote.
Another thing that I thought stood out to me was just, and this was another candid moment from Zach, where he said that they had brought Ryan Finley in for his on-campus visit, and they had another player there as well, and Zach basically just shook that player's hand and wanted to get back to Finley.
Yeah.
Those two, like you had phrased it, two quarterbacks talking ball.
Two QBs talking ball.
Right, but... I think that speaks to the fact that they did a lot of work on Finley, and they were pretty excited to be able to draft him in the fourth round, a guy that they really fell in love with.
Yeah, and what piggybacked off that was also interesting, where I was kind of curious why they didn't bring Dwayne Haskins in for a visit. And they get 30 of them. There's this guy that might be available to you as a first-round QB, worth looking into, right? And it sounded like, well, first of all, he sort of couched it with, look, there's a lot of different ways that you can get to know guys, but clearly they would never have drafted a quarterback if they didn't bring them in for a visit. That's why we got off the Haskins train, you know, when everybody else for some reason was jumping on it nationally, because they didn't bring him in for a visit. And they weren't going to bring him in for a visit. And so you're like, well, maybe there was a secret visit. Maybe there was someone somewhere else. Maybe they did something on campus. And then the more we dug, the more we realized they didn't. And so we got off the Haskins bus immediately and wrote the story about how this is what they did at quarterback. This is what they looked at, but they're not going to take one. Because there's just no way they would take who they think could be the future of their franchise without bringing him in. Hell, they brought Ryan Finley in knowing that it would expose them to other teams knowing they're going to try to draft him at some point. That's why they had to trade up. They had to burn some assets because they brought him in. And this Sunday, my BX was talking with the scouts, and they sort of talked through that. Like, yeah, you know, we realized that teams knew he was the only quarterback. We knew that would get reported. We knew it would be out there. But we wanted to feel vindicated and be confident in that pick if we were going to make one, and so we weren't going to not bring him in even if it exposed us, and we could always use our picks to move up. And that's ended up being exactly what they did. I found it interesting that they had their evaluation on Haskins and it did not involve them even thinking it being worthy to bring him in and have two QBs talk ball.
And there was so much airtime devoted or copy written about how the Bengals might be in play for Haskins.
Right. Well, and I think it was legit because there's reasons it makes sense, and depending on your... But what did we say every single time? It goes back to their evaluation. And Duke said it to us himself. Look, if a quarterback we feel like is worthy of that pick is there, we're not opposed to taking him. And I think they stood by that. And I think what we learned was they didn't view Haskins as being that. And like you know, we said it in week and after on the when we walked out of the night of the first round. The Jonah Williams pick will be as much be defined by how Jonah Williams plays as how Dwayne Haskins played. Because they had the opportunity if they wanted it. But clearly they didn't view him as the guy. Or at least not at this point. So all that I found interesting. So there's some other things I want to start here because there's been a lot of talk about the offensive line. I wrote a piece about sort of the uncertainty bomb that has been dropped into that room. Because of this draft, and we've kind of kicked around, what are they going to do? Who's going to play where? We talked last week with pretty much everyone on the line, and I found it interesting that they're sort of still shrugging.
Like, yeah, they handled that professionally. Clint Bowling and
Cordy Glenn in particular are in the crosshairs because I think everyone is on the expectation that Jonah Williams is going to play left tackle. He could play guard, but every time we talk about him, what is the same thing Zach keeps saying? He played left tackle at a high level in the SEC for 3 years. Played tackle. So now maybe he ends up at right, but I'm not getting the impression that they're budging off Bobby Hart at this point. So it puts those guys in the crosshairs. And you know what? It is two guys standing there saying the right things. Cordy Glenn pointed out that it was a long time and many millions ago that he played anything besides left tackle.
Well, yeah, both of those guys have done really well. Has, you know, UGA people tend to do.
No, of course. Yeah, here we
go. Whatever.
It always goes back to this. Well, you know, Clint Bowling, known for his versatility, you know, coming into the draft a long time ago, and he's proved that. I mean, he's been able to kick out to left tackle, but, you know, he's not a – that he he's comfortable playing guard. That's what he wants to do. I don't think anybody wants to see him kicking out to tackle. Cordy Glenn, it's funny. When you really look at it, and we ran these numbers a little bit, you go through PFF and you know, you can do grades if you want. If you're not a grade guy, you can look at the raw data of pressures allowed and sacks allowed and things like that. People don't like to hear this because they viewed these two guys through very different lenses last year, of one of rage and one of hope. They played very similar, Cordy Glenn and Bobby Hart, last year. The primary difference being Cordy Glenn actually allowed more pressures than Bobby Hart, 44 to 39, if you extrapolate over, because Cordy missed 3 games with an injury. So on a 16-game scale, Cordy Glenn had more pressures allowed. The difference is that a lot more of those were converted to sacks on Bobby Hart. Bobby Hart gives up 10 sacks. Cordy, 2.
And Bobby had the penalties.
Bobby was better, graded out much better in the run game than Cordy did. Cordy admitted him. He admitted to us last week, I did up and down. It was not up to my standards. It was not the type of year that I expect to play. And the question becomes, he is turning 30. He is coming through injury years. He is not playing at the same level that he did in Buffalo. That was his worst year of his career here last year. Do you need to move him inside to extend his career? Is that what's best for Cordy Glenn, to get value out of him? Because, you know, you want him on. He is among your best five.
Well, to play this out, if we're going to slot Jonah in at left tackle.
We don't have to.
Well, I think we could.
I think we need to do that.
Yeah, and then Billy Price at center, John Miller at right guard. Now the question becomes, do you want to have Bobby Hart in the lineup? Or you could put Cordy Glenn at right tackle? Or do you, like you said, do you think that Cordy, who played guard at Georgia, basically exclusively, if I remember correctly, I have to go back and look at it, but he played more guard in college than he did tackle.
He played in different places, but yeah, he played a lot of guard.
But he's never played guard in the NFL.
Never. Every single snap has been at left tackle since he came in the NFL. That's a long time.
And so we're talking about, do you have Clint Bowling or Cordy Glenn at left guard if you believe in Bobby Hart?
So, and you said earlier, Paul, that they're not budging off of Bobby Hart attack.
I don't get that sense. I mean, I don't get the sense that they're looking to displace Bobby Hart. They paid him. They have a coach that clearly believes in him, or they would have let him walk. They certainly wouldn't have. I don't think they would have treated him the way that they've treated him to this point if they planned on just kicking him down the line here.
So the coaching staff, based on what you guys are gathering here, views Bobby Hart as the better player at right tackle than Cordy Glenn.
That's the thing that we don't know.
Okay.
Not necessarily. They'd have to be viewing him as better than Clint Bowling, because somebody's getting displaced. They want their best five out there. So what are you going to do? Are you going to put Cordy at right tackle or at left guard? So it's in a lot of ways it's Bobby Hart versus Clint Bowling. Yeah. Who do they feel like is more effective? Two is part of this, because Cordy's not coming off the field. One of those two guys would be the ones coming off the field. I would make an argument that all these guards, and I would throw Cordy in the mix, should all be competing for both guard spots. I'm not. I mean, they paid John Miller. I'm not feeding him that job either, personally.
It sounds
like everything we heard, though, in the lead up to the draft was he's the right guard. He's going to start at right guard.
And it also it feels like the coaching staff has an idea who they want to have in that five. They just want to get everybody.
They just want everybody in the room, and they want to address it with everybody and tell them how they view it, and then let them play a little bit and make sure it looks the way they want it to look, and then do it. And like Zach said last week, you know, I said last year we talked a whole lot about the offensive line. I remember you talking about how you were kind of hadn't started here yet, but you were knowing that there was a possibility. You listened to the BBP a lot, and all we talked about was the offensive line because it was uncertain through the entire preseason almost. What was going to happen? And that is not healthy when you're trying to build chemistry. And last week, Zach said, we're going to know by the time we get to camp. And really, by the time OTAs end, I think, you know, mini camp happens in the middle of July, I would assume that we'll have seen these guys all out there in certain positions. We'll see where they're lining up. They'll be comfortable with that. And I think they'll tell everyone, and we'll know definitely sooner than later, and that's the way he wants it. And I think the players want that too.
So how would you line them up?
Me personally, throwing everything else out the window.
You, right.
Me personally, it would be Jonah Williams, Clint Bowling, Billy Price, John Miller, Cordy Glenn.
All
right. Bobby Hart would be the swing tackle.
I think we're all in agreement on that. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's what it would be. Now, what do I think it will be on opening day? I think it will be Jonah Williams, Cordy Glenn, Billy Price, John Miller, Bobby Hart.
Okay,
that's what I think. And I do think they're open to a competition at guard. I would open up. I shouldn't say Clint Bowling necessarily. I would open that up to a competition as a whole. The left guard position. I would open that up to Westerman. I would open Redmond, Hopkins. Yeah. Everybody.
Let's not forget about Hopkins here.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I'm serious.
Came in and he was very good in place of Billy Price, and you could make an argument he was better than Billy Price last year at center, and some people would say they should open the center competition up. I'm pretty bullish on Billy Price. I feel like he's made of the right stuff, that he will take the step, and he will not allow himself to have another year that is anything but better than last year was. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to have a better year this year. I just feel like that.
Yeah, he's got a full off season.
Right. No injury craft to deal with. You know, that's a big deal too.
And Hopkins he's so valuable for if something were to happen to Billy, or if something did happen to John Miller, or he needed to play.
He played
a
all three positions last year, didn't he?
Yeah, he can play all three. Yeah. But I mean, that doesn't mean he couldn't start and still play all three. It doesn't mean that if something happened to somebody, if Billy got hurt, that Trey wouldn't move inside, and then they could put. I mean, you still have options, because it goes back to the same thing. All these versatile guys, all they keep saying is get our best five out there, and you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Hopkins is in those top five.
No.
in my opinion.
Hey, you just need three tackles, three guards, two centers.
I would love to see Christian Westerman get an actual shot, Westerman Hive, but they have now brought in three different people to get after the guard position. Like, clearly they viewed that as the weak spot on last year's team that was not getting it done. That is apparent, because John Miller, Jonah Williams by effect, and now Michael Jordan, because you would open him up into the competition as well. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention him in the competition.
Another
Another versatile guy who could come in and play guard or center, and hell, he could start at guard.
I really enjoy the Westerman Hive on Twitter, but I've got a bad feeling that gag may may not have legs for very much
longer. I have a bad feeling more so that that crew is going to be proved correct because he's going to land somewhere and play and kick ass. That's what he's done when he's played.
He plays, he has played well.
When he's been given an opportunity for whatever reason. Now, let's keep in mind, two different coaching staffs have not seen him worthy of playing. It's not like it was just Paul Alexander, not like it was just Frank Pollock, and now we've seen another coaching staff come in and bring in people to basically play above him. Now we'll see if they give him a chance, but I find that interesting. I would want him in the mix, though. So that is going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out now going forward. So some other stuff to get into, people that were, never want to see us the day after the draft. Usually, it's these guys. It's funny, we go up. We go in there, and Clint and Cordy and all those guys, they knew, all right, here come all the reporters. They're going to want to talk to me about how they drafted these dudes to take my job.
Hey, they stood there and took it and said all the right things. Well, but you could tell.
Go ahead. I'm just saying both of them, they both have on their second deals. I mean, I know Bowling, too, is like, all right, look, man, I got my second deal. I'm probably just going to finish out. I'm going to be replaced. I think, like you said, he's being a pro about it.
The Bowling thing is interesting, and people have been asking.
I don't think he's too upset, is what I'm saying.
No. Well,
he gets it.
He understands. Yeah. I mean, he said it's competition. It's always been competition. But for some of these guys, you knew that some more than others. But clearly that position's been under attack. So, he's got something to prove. I find interesting in. I've been talking about him for a while and people have been confused by why I'm saying that I could see him going, and I pointed out his contract and I got a sense that they weren't thrilled with that guard position all year last year. And, I just wonder, it's just hard not to wonder, if you were Clint Bowling and you made your money and you go in to start training camp and you know you're not the starter. Your plans are for you not to start. Man, how interested am I in going through a training camp? Now, granted, $5 million, but
I don't know, man. I don't know. I understand, $5 million is, and you want to go through a training camp and all, but I think he would. I think he would do no problem. I don't think he'd be bitter about it. I don't think he'd be salty about it. I think he would just
– maybe.
I think so.
I think that
– him specifically.
Yeah.
In what we know of Clint, him specifically. Maybe not another player, but him specifically.
From what I've gathered about Clint, he wants to finish his contract. I don't think that he would play for another team.
Yeah.
So if the coaching staff wanted if
Frank Pollock called him, they let him go and Frank Pollock called him, he might not be interested.
If the coaching staff
did
him a solid, quote unquote, by saying, "Hey, we're going to go in a different direction of starting lineup if you want us to cut you loose and you could go somewhere else," I don't think Clint would play for another team.
Right. The other thing is that I don't think they would do that either, because they wouldn't want to cut him loose because they want to protect themselves if something did happen.
Right.
I mean, first day of camp and Cordy Glenn breaks his leg.
Right.
Guess who you need? You need all those. You want Clint. And that's even if you don't have him starting. And you may view him as a starter even. You know what I mean? So there's a lot. It makes for a lot of uncertainty there. And it's good uncertainty because they haven't had depth. Hell, they've had crap starters, much less no depth.
Yeah, I see it more less uncertainty. I mean, it is, but it's almost like potential.
Mm-hmm.
And going into this fifth season covering this team, and when we just went through the two leading options of the five best offensive linemen, I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, either one, man, compared to the last few years, it's fine. It's going to be fine. With all that depth and all the players that they've added in the draft picks and Cordy Glenn and Jonah Williams, I think they're going to be fine, either of those two leading options right now.
Let's just say this. You could make an argument they would literally be better at four of the five offensive line positions, because even if they kept Bobby Hart. So you get the same thing from Bobby Hart. If you had John Miller is going to be better than Alex Redmond, Billy Price you assume is going to take a step in his second year without all the garbage he's dealing with. Your guard position in theory is going to be better whoever ends up there. If it's Cordy Glenn, for sure, a bigger, more powerful guy who was a left tackle, you would think is an improvement there. And Jonah Williams, I'm going to think, at the way he played in the SEC and who he is, that he's going to come in and be better than Cordy Glenn was last year. Think about that. Yeah. Unless just that on its head, like on the surface, I mean. Think about that. If you said you improved 4 of your 5 offensive line positions over last year and you have the skill position players, this guy's have you feel good about your offense.
And a little bit of depth, too.
And you actually have depth now that you're comfortable with. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So what I was going to kind of say earlier when we're talking about people don't want to see us after the draft, you know who was kind of like, yeah, come on over?
John Ross.
John Ross. Let's talk about it.
He talked for like 15 minutes.
He's like, let's go. Let's talk about how great this draft was. I'm going to hug Stanley Morgan, tell him welcome undrafted free agent receiver Stanley Morgan. You're my man. You know, I mean, because no receivers drafted. And what we learned, and this was interesting in talking to the scouts, which shout out to Mike Potts and Steven Radicevich, man. Christian Sarkisian, I talked to you for that. Those guys put in so much work. I don't know. I mean, people know. I mean, these dudes go hard all year and work up to this moment. This is their chance, you know. And it's a lot. And they have had a lot of great insight. I appreciate them for sharing a lot of their insights on the road. But they, you know, when we went back to the Drew Sample pick, and we talked a lot about that. Obviously, people have been talking a lot about it, but I talked with them about it. And I think what it comes down to is they were looking at Drew Sample, and they had a very good grade on him. They had a, you know, they had a second round grade on him. And there were other receivers maybe in that mix, which is what we brought up that they were considering. But inevitably, really the difference maker was they just didn't view receiver as a priority to the point that the tight end was a priority. And so that was what we talked about in the draft lead-up series. It was the John Ross variable. Clearly, they backed up what their words said, that they were not full of it. When they said, we're not shopping John Ross, we believe in Joe, we think we can make him great, we love it. Now, they also said it's going to be a competition, but they're comfortable with the rest of that room, with Josh Malone and Auden Tate. And you know, and we know Marv was not an Auden Tate guy, but obviously the personnel people very much were. So maybe that's hope for him as well. But, you know, you've got this draft was as much a stamp of approval for John Ross and all those receivers as it was anything else. And I think that should be a reason for optimism for Bengals fans that this staff came in and said, I think we're all right there. I believe that we can get it out of these guys.
So John Ross is the number 3 receiver right now, like on paper?
Yeah, I think they view it as a competition, but you would certainly call him leader in the clubhouse. I mean,
all right.
Still not a believer?
I mean, they're the football guys think they can get number 3 production out of John Ross. I'm like, okay. But, I mean, I'm going to wait till I see it, you know. I'll believe it when I see it because I was hard on John Ross after the draft and during the draft. And I just, you know, I hope it works out because based on what we've seen, you know, he's not going to be that number 3 receiver in my opinion. But I'm not a football guy like these guys.
Oh, we know Kareem's stance.
Yeah.
An epic rant Kareem had after that second round.
Kareem is anti-John Ross as much as he's pro-Tyler Eifert.
You know why?
Because Tyler Eifert makes great pictures and John Ross doesn't because the ball's always going the wrong
direction. I mean, Eifert can catch the ball, dude. I'm just saying, man.
You did ask Zach Taylor point blank, you know, was John Ross used incorrectly or not? You know, not put in positions to do what we thought John Ross could do. And Zach Taylor actually disputed that. He said, I wouldn't call it a misnomer.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he probably didn't want to, you know, trash previous coaching staffer. But
I think he legitimately meant he did not view that as a scheme issue. He just viewed it as, you know, I think what we've all known it is. It's a confidence issue. It's a translating practice to game day issue. It's something inside of John Ross's head because it's not in his athleticism. I mean, Christ, the dude is a physical freak. We know that much.
And mentally, I mean, the guy's bright. He's smart.
He's super bright.
Yes.
You know, he seems like he picks up things quickly. He's
maybe
very
too
nice.
Bright.
Yeah. Maybe.
Right.
Oh,
you
get right.
In yeah,
your
you
own
don't
head.
Want that. Right.
You get in your own head a little bit. Sometimes it's best to just shut up, stop thinking, and play. Mm-hmm. You know, you get in your own head a little bit too
and
much.
And the narrative still hasn't been changed. I go back to before the draft. We're out there for the mini camp, and John Ross isn't going. He doesn't have a helmet on.
Right.
And I know it's not a big deal this time of the year. You don't want to push anything, get an injury, but you're sitting here a couple days out of the draft thinking, are they going to go with a wide receiver? And John Ross isn't practicing.
He's out here. Tightness, soreness.
He's taking mental reps. I mean, and from that, what, he put that though? On Twitter.
Exactly.
Right.
From what?
What are you sore with? I mean, you working out hard or something? I mean, I don't know.
Right. It's always something.
It's always something.
It seems with number 15, it's always something. And that's why I thought there should be more priority put on the receiver position, because it's always something with number 15, it seems like. Now, and maybe there is belief in some of the other guys too. You know, because if you think that Auden Tate could be a number 3, or you think you can get it out of Josh Malone, or God forbid Cody Core, or whatever we're talking about here. Like, you know, Tyler Boyd is a slot guy when you're in 3 wide, so you don't have to worry about that type of, you know, because you need a certain guy that can play in the slot. Tyler Boyd is that. So you just need a guy who can play in the outside however much percentage of the time you're going to be in 3 wides, which may not be that much if you consider that, you know, I know the Rams did it a lot last year, but judging by the assets they have at tight end, I think you could see a lot of, what are we going to see? 2 tight end sets with Tyler Eifert and Drew Sample. You have the running guy and the passing guy, so you're even more versatile. You kind of have like, you have like a number 3 receiver on, like a Incredible Hulk number 3 receiver, right? So John Ross can't, Tyler Eifert, he could block some for you too, or you put him out there. So you're going to get teams mostly playing base D on you when you're in 2 tights, but you put Eifert out there, he's a receiver. And he's a good number 3 receiver even for you probably. So you have mismatches. I feel like...
I like that.
I feel like that, even with CJ, you could do that. I feel like that is what they probably view as their best lineup, right? And if that's the case, now how much is that number 3 receiver even going to play? Not as much as most teams. So, you know, the scouts also, another thing that point that I liked with them, they were talking about it with the Sample pick, was we talk a lot about playtime percentage. And what would the playtime percentage be? They were talking about it specifically in through the lens of, okay, you know, a tight end that is an athletic run catching tight end or a run blocking guy. Well, Drew Sample is a guy that he don't need to come off the field either way. You know, if you're going to take one of the tight ends that is maybe they'll give you an extra 1 or 2 plays up the seam a game. But you got to take him off the field all the time, and people know when they see that guy on the field, he's looking to pass and he's not able to do both. Playtime percentage, you get a lot more out of the run blocking, do it all tight end, then you maybe even would out of the number 3 receiver, potentially.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's how they view, I mean, the way loading up the tight end position, and that's a great way to use Tyler Eifert.
Right. Yeah, because we talked about how with Eifert, you knew what was coming. You kind of lose the appeal of him being such a weapon because
you know what that weapon is.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I hear often people pointing out every time Tyler Eifert was on the field last year, the other team was in nickel. Yeah, but how many times did they run it at the nickel effectively? No. They're in nickel because they know you're throwing it when he's out there, right? They weren't often enough running at the nickel with Tyler. So
you created your own mismatch,
right? But when you're in 2 with Tyler out there, now you have him in a mismatch, and they don't know what you're gonna do. And the same with CJ, even because, you know, to a lesser degree, obviously Tyler much more dynamic in the pass game. But you have, you know, you're really versatile at that point. And we're not even talking about the fact that Drew Sample can catch the ball too. We'll see. We're under the assumption that
I think it's going to be fun to look back in 3 years at that Drew Sample pick.
I think this whole draft, those first 2 picks with the QB in play and the QB in play, what if Drew Lock ends up great? I mean, these first 2 picks are really defining for this team going forward in a lot of ways. I mean, the first 2 of the Zach Taylor era, they could have gone a ton of different game-changing directions. But with the quarterback involved and the receivers involved and the question of whether sample was worth it. And, you know, there's just a lot of different directions they could have gone, and we'll see how that plays out. You can say that most years maybe, but this felt particularly dynamic this year. John took it all fairly well. I mean, you wrote that story.
Yeah, he said that you know, he wasn't surprised. I mean, John always, he would welcome on competition, he said, but I think he certainly was pretty happy with the way it played out.
How could you not be? You know? let's talk about the Finley, Dalton, Driscoll dynamic a little bit. Obviously, they really like Ryan Finley, and that's apparent from as a coaching staff. And you know, they had a very high grade on him. I think Mike Potts said he wouldn't have been surprised if he'd gone in the second. He thought he could have been gone in the second round. They weren't willing to go there with him, I don't think, but you know, he very well could have when you look at his skill set and the way a lot of people believed in him. I've heard Finley mentioned as the steal of this draft by, you know, if you care what the national pundits say, which I don't either direction really care, good or bad.
Those guys, they try to be good at their job, though, so you got to at least respect what they're saying. I mean, to be able to get what most people think is the fourth or fifth best quarterback in the draft, to be able to get him there in the
fourth
round.
Maybe even higher than that.
Maybe even, yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing was, you know, then the funny thing is always the national storyline that comes out of, like, Dalton says the quarterback was good for the backup competition. Right. No. Yeah, he did, because the coach said it. It was the first word said in the Finley press conference. So, yes, this is not – Ryan Finley is not here to take Andy Dalton's job again. I feel like we need to repeat it almost, because I'm like, why am I reading these stories acting like this was some – this was the big quarterback move? It was a quarterback move. It was not the quarterback move.
Well, they're able to turn every quarterback move into a headline, so
yeah,
it's to be expected. But yeah, I mean, Brian Callahan did get out front of it. Zach Taylor said that no special text or call to Andy had to be made about it. They're already speaking on a daily basis already, but it sounded like, you know, the way that Andy phrased it when he said, yeah, they need to have some more competition with the backup, I knew when he said the word backup that could be turned against him in an aggregation post.
Yeah.
But he was being real casual about it. Yeah, because
the dreaded aggregation posts.
I had to slide that one in there.
They're everywhere.
So,
well, I mean, yeah, it's because that's what it was. He's only saying the truth. The truth is that Ryan Finley was brought in here to compete and, let's be honest, displace Jeff Driscoll. Sorry, Jeff.
And isn't
enjoy
Ryan,
your time?
Isn't Ryan Finley like 24, 25?
Yeah, he played 6 years in college.
Yeah, so he's old. He's not some young. Right. You know, he's not some young
and that,
raw.
I mean, that could be good for, a backup quarterback with, not again, no pro experience, but he's experienced. He's played a lot of football.
Yeah, and he's played well at a high, you know. ACC is legit. I mean, they played in big games. He's played well in big games.
Sounds like a comfortable backup.
You want a guy that can come in and win you some games, and that maybe you can develop maybe into can more develop. Down the road. And obviously Zach Taylor feels a connection to this dude.
Well, look, I'm not nearly the football expert of any football coach, but this Bengals staff with Zach Taylor, Brian Callahan, Van Pelt, Dan Pitcher, they have so many quarterbacks on the staff.
Yes. I mean,
and they wanted this guy. So I think it's a pretty good indication for how they feel about it.
Yeah, their credentials are unquestioned on this one.
Yeah, and not only did they want, I mean, I think there was unanimity about it, that consensus that this is the guy. They didn't bring anybody else in, knowing it would expose them. And that is, to me, your actions speak so much louder than your words on that, and I just feel like that was showing that they think he's got the ability to do a lot of things in this system that say a
what
lot of the
need.
Same things that Andy Dalton already.
Well,
can
I was
going to
say, what are the two pro comparisons you got for him? It's Jared Goff and Andy Dalton.
Right. Well, Goff because of his length, because this guy's long and wiry, like Goff is. Now you don't have the number one pick overall attributes of the arm and everything else that Goff has, so you're getting, you know. But as far as size and the kind of the way that he plays a little bit,
I'm so glad you didn't say arm talent.
I know that's a pop. Yeah, can really spin it. Right?
I hate arm talent. I hate that.
He can spin it. So that, I mean, that's kind of where that sits. So I know people, maybe if you've seen or read something, like that's what the situation is, and Andy sort of reacted as such, and he took it well. Although, you know, he took Jonah Williams out for dinner. He did not take Ryan Finley, although Ryan didn't come in, so I guess he didn't have a chance. Maybe he will.
He didn't even shoot him a text either, though. No. So.
Better take that left tackle out for dinner.
Oh, yeah, that left tackle needs to be out.
Keep that boy fed, man.
You need to be buying that. All right. Let's move on from that a little bit. Again, if you have not gone back and listened to last week with Zach Taylor, a lot of good stuff in there, talking through all the picks a little bit more and about the dynamics of what went down and, you know, trades and everything else, which they do look at the trade chart, which they failed on. So I was like, I don't need to go in on the trade chart situation here. This isn't, but I mean, look, they
lost a pick.
They essentially, but I think they were willing to for the things that they felt were valuable to them, and they felt like what was valuable to them was nailing that fourth round, where they felt like there was great value. You know, they got a bunch of the picks that they had at the top of day three, including, you know, I believe Travion Williams, you know, who slides to them in the six, but they had those three fourth rounders that they really feel, which I think if you talk to most, any national expert that has liked their draft usually starts with that fourth round and feeling like they really hit that. We had a bit that Jim and I used to do on power rankings, where we would rank stupid things because power rankings are inherently stupid. This is my chance to talk about how stupid power rankings are again. So they come out in mass after the draft, right? Everybody wants to re-rank. Rank them. Move them up because everybody's better now, right?
I mean, talk about clickbait, man.
Dude. And if any power ranking has ever proven predictive of what actually is going to happen in the NFL season, I would give them some respect.
I'm just saying.
They are not the same way. Even the Vegas odds, and those guys know what they're doing, are not predictive of what is going to happen in the regular season. It always cracks me up. It is predictive of national bias and teams that people aren't paying attention to or care about. So when I see power rankings come out, and of course Bengals are at the bottom of most of them, they have been all offseason, for a number of reasons. But I just couldn't help myself because we make the Rams comparison all the time. Because the Bengals are trying to recreate what the Rams did, obviously. And we've talked about how, if you look 2 years ago, the narrative around the Rams, they were a joke. They were dumb. And no one's saying that Zach Taylor is Sean McVay. It's unfair to make that comparison between any new coach. However, they're trying to do the same thing. So people, power rankings, they're at the bottom. And I'm like, I would like it to be known. I had to go back and look at the power rankings from 2017.
From what site?
ESPN.
Okay.
Just your one you see most often.
I wanted you to at them in this tweet.
At ESPN.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Rams that year were 29th this time of year in their power rankings. Right before, as the Sean McVay era was beginning. And the post, you know, bemoans the Rams and how inept they've been. And well, I don't know. Maybe they didn't address any of their issues that they have, and you know, right? Because power rankings, no, no. You know, were people all over Kansas City? There was we had nobody knew what Patrick Mahomes was going to be. Were people all over the Bears? People maybe think the Bears might be better, but there are still people thinking Trubisky might. I mean, people that think they know don't really know, because the people that you have to be really paying attention. And I want to point that out.
Well, you have to really be paying attention to 30 different things. It's impossible.
It is.
It's how you end up thinking that the Bengals might draft Dwayne Haskins.
Without bringing him in. They just pull a blind flyer on him at 11.
Hey, they're eventually going to have to move on from Andy Dalton at some point, right? Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah. Right, and that's it. And that's the extent of the research. We spend a lot of time on here ripping on national people.
Yeah, because they're, it's just not good.
They're just not connected, man. They're not here.
They're wrong.
You know?
They're trying to do too much.
Marvin's still in the woods.
And then they and they parachute in, you know, and like they parachute when they want to, and it's just they don't have, they're just not here.
I enjoy the parachute in and then write the story that we wrote 3 months ago. That's always my favorite.
And then it's
thing.
Widely shared. Like, did you see this? Did you see this?
Yeah.
Like, my dudes wrote that a month ago, man.
Oh, man. All right. Ooh. Fire the coach guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Thriving.
What do we got? What is... The fans just got to be feeling themselves. They got to be walking around with their chest out. It's like Vince McMahon, right, walking in the building.
Oh, that's Strut.
Strut.
What are we up to? Three new days?
Everybody's in a new day.
Do you know
now.
Who the longest tenured coach is in the city now?
Yeah, Luke Fickell.
Luke.
In his third year, and he's going to be gone soon, too.
Ah, come on, man.
Come on. Dude, Ritter's going to lead them to like a 11-3 or something like that. Cause they'll lose to Ohio State.
You think Luke's going to go to Purdue or something?
Yes.
No. I don't think so.
Mark that.
I don't think
Mark
so.
Mark that. Record.
Like, I'm talking about specifically Purdue.
Would Luke Fickell go to Purdue?
I don't think he would.
Yes!
I don't think so.
You don't think that would be a raise?
I think it'd be a raise,
you think
yes,
being in the Big Ten isn't an enviable gig?
He's got a huge family, man. And I don't think...
What's that got to do with anything?
I think it has a lot to do with it because moving
West
a family
Lafayette is
of
a beautiful place.
Of that size, you know, coming down to Cincinnati. He was in Ohio State. He was at Ohio State for like 16 years, okay? So what I'm trying to say is that moving down to Cincinnati for Luke was not very easy, okay? And so he's got a good thing going here. I understand the raise and the money aspect, but I don't think he's going to uproot his entire family to go to Purdue. If Ohio State comes open, yes, go back to Ohio State. It has to be super blue chip, and I don't think something like Purdue would attract him away from Cincinnati personally. I don't.
When they have a good year this year, he's going somewhere. And it may be super blue chip.
Okay.
Hell, Butch Jones got the Tennessee job, and he was not that great here.
No, Tennessee is a different – that caliber is a different story. But Purdue,
I think Fickell is a great landing spot for a middle-of-the-road Big Ten team that wants to be the next Ohio State or take that next step.
I don't have any insight, but I
yes, you do.
I agree with Kareem that Luke Fickell should be selective. I don't think he should go for that middle of the road because it is so hard to win at Illinois or Purdue.
This is what I'm
talking
about.
Some of these places. He should only go to the destination job.
But look, if they lose the first two games this year, where they play UCLA and Ohio State back to back, right? To open the season, they lose those two. Fire Luke.
Right.
Oh, they're going to be out. Fire Luke guy is going to be out.
That was the original point.
Dude, you know, I mean, I've been doing extra innings on Sundays on 700, and David Bell should be fired. I had like four of those calls on Sunday. David Bell's the worst manager ever. He's the reason they're losing. Fire him. He just got here. Alan Koch, gone. FC, expansion team, I don't care. Gone. You suck. Everybody, gone. Brian Price gone. Marv gone. Dude, if the Bengals lose 34-3 in Seattle, they're gonna be calling for Zach Taylor's head. Let's just cut off before he becomes Shula.
And don't forget fire Mick guy.
Mick got run out.
I'm just saying.
He's the big one because Mick did get run.
He got run out
fans,
of town. Yeah.
Fans wore on him and ran him out of town. Yeah. Now, would he still have gone to UCLA if he felt appreciated here?
I think he wanted it. Yeah.
But if he really felt embraced by the University of Cincinnati
fan base,
mm-hmm. Thank you, he would have stayed. This was where he wanted to be.
Well, maybe he should have advanced in the tournament a little bit further more than once.
Zing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not saying that fire the coach guy isn't often valid in some of the complaints, but it is an interesting, it is an interesting culture that has now permeated across. This is what happens, by the way, when none of your teams ever win anything and don't give fans happiness in sports. I feel like Cincinnati fans as a whole, a general, across almost every team now, if you're from here and you like all the local teams, which that's probably half the people here are probably fall into that bucket for the most part, you are eternally frustrated right now and just want to know what the hell it's like to enjoy watching sports.
Zero patience.
Also. And your patience is absolutely nil. I mean, that is apparent.
Justifiably so, you know.
Well, it's just, it's a carryover effect. Right. It's an overflow from sport to sport. You know, if it's not like Boston, where everybody's happy and just holding rings and cups and like everything, you know, here they just want anything to know that it's that you can win ever here, and they're just sick of seeing people lose and being told to be patient and handle a rebuild and just done with it. And so everybody is like, get rid of these dudes. And it's just, it is amazing how that has happened across the entire city.
For the record, I thought Mick did a really good coaching job this past season.
Oh, it was probably his best coach.
Yeah, I think it was his best. So,
yeah.
Considering all that they lost.
Being able to get something out of Brooks, he's a not only a usable player, but one of the Bearcats' best players.
Yep.
I mean, totally. That was amazing.
I just wanted to balance that out after I took my shot.
Yeah. Well, I Zach Taylor, I think his job is probably safe for a couple years. If there's one person that we know will not be pressured by the city, it's
Mr. Brown.
Mike Brown is going to give Zach Taylor every chance. So I think that it won't be long. You could argue it won't be long and Zach Taylor will be the most tenured coach in this city. I would argue that will be the case at some point.
Luke Fickell renting. According to Paul.
I think this isn't going to be getting run out of town.
No.
This is going to be him earning a promotion. But that's part of the gig over there, too. All right. I think we can start to wrap it up here. How far in are we, Kareem?
50 minutes and 42 seconds.
Oh, that's about the time we start getting weird. So I just want to personally thank everybody that listens to the BBP. And again, I'm not leaving the city. I will be, and I'm not leaving like Bengals discussion, just so you know that. Just keep an eye out on Twitter. But look, I will say, it has been so cool to watch the BBP grow and become a thing that people enjoy and have people come up. There's two things that make me happiest if I hear someone say them to me, and I hope they say, I don't believe any Bengals news until I hear you say it, and the podcast is how I get my Bengals news. I watch games and I listen to the podcast, and that's what I need. That is like two of the greatest and you make me be able to handle Bengals seasons. Like, you make it enjoyable to actually go through a Bengals season. Because often, in the last 3 years in particular, not super enjoyable. I hear from you all the time, and it's so great to have. I just want to personally thank everybody that has been a part of embracing this podcast and loving it, because it's been sort of my favorite thing that I've done in my time here at the Inquirer. So shout out to everybody that listens to the BBP. I know it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to, you know, the podcast isn't going to disappear, but obviously I won't be on it. So I just want to thank everybody that has kind of followed along and you know, embraced it, because it's been a blast to bring it to you.
Okay, I'm going to go throw up and get inebriated.
Well, it's a good point to also bring out, if you're going to get inebriated, you know how you should do that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Coast to coast. You're probably in the punch you in the IPA zone at this point, though, aren't you?
Well, we'll see if it tastes just as great coming back up.
Shout out to 50 West, man. That was such a great event last week. And it's just, their patio on a night like that is just one of the great places in this city.
It's where you need to be.
Dude, I mean, think about it. We had a great guest, a great setup. All the picnic tables were full. It was like a perfect night. Sand volleyball going on behind us. Delicious beers that we hung out and drank a couple too many of afterwards. And it was just, it was great interacting with everybody that came out. I'm so glad we did it and did it that way, because even if it was one of the last things that I did here, it was just the perfect night. It was a great thing. Even though we ended up having an issue with the audio, which we apologize for, when the wind went nuts and almost knocked that tent over, apparently shook a cable. And so about the 13, 14 minute mark, it gets staticky. I heard from people on Twitter. I know. Apologies. Wish we could have fixed it. We couldn't. It happens. Wind, conditions, things get real.
Man, audio's tough, man.
Audio, dude,
it really is.
Because you can't, you can't go back in the system and fix it.
And you can't fix it. And then, you kind of have to, you can double and triple and triple check before you record. And then when you're recording, you just have to monitor it. And when you finally, because you're monitoring it, then you notice something after monitoring it for a little while.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But we're getting better.
It's getting better. It sounds great.
And I'm going to get better.
I believe it. I believe it. Kareem, Fletcher, it's been
real,
absolute
man.
Pleasure.
It's been great.
Working with you guys. You guys are the best. I know it will continue to go on and be fantastic. So, I felt really lucky, because it's like every single person I feel like that I've worked with in connection with this beat has just been awesome. Like going all the way back. I mean, I've worked with Fletcher, you're the fourth different beat guy I've done this with. They've all been just great. Like all the way back to Reedy, Joe Reedy, Skinny, who's just a madman. God bless him. Jim-O. Obviously, me and Jim had the longest run out of all those. And now Fletcher, I mean, it's just, it makes it fun. Like that's, people are always like, oh man, you get to cover the Bengals. That's so awesome. And yeah, it is. And I never lose perspective of how great that is. I mean, I remember being a kid and thinking like, oh my God, what if I got to go ever in the press box, right? And that's like the coolest thing. And I still feel that way. But when people ask me like, what do you love most of your job? It's not that I get to cover the Bengals. I mean, that's fantastic. It's all the people that I get to work with, and that's really what's made it so great here is the people that we get to deal with on a regular basis, and it's all y'all. So thank you again for being...
Thanks, Paulie.
...being awesome. All right, I guess that about wraps it up. Wraps her up. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. Thanks to our good friends out at 50 West for... fueling the pod and everything they've done for us over the years. So we'll talk to you on the flip side.